Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. President Trump steps back from the brink of an escalating trade war. In the Rose Garden yesterday, he said he will negotiate with the EU. That was the day after he offered American farmers a $12 billion bailout to mitigate the problems his own tariffs have caused. The big question now, of course, is how does this all play out? Where does the United States go from here, and how does the world react? This hour on Point, farmers, tariffs, and trade wars. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of the president's trade strategy, his $12 billion bailout? Are you being affected by the tariffs? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I want to start first in Juneta, Nebraska, where Jay Reiners is there. Jay's a fourth-generation corn and soybean farmer. Jay, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Jane.
Well, there are a lot of moving parts to this whole story, to the tariffs and the trade wars, but I wanted to start with someone who's actually in the thick of it all, who's directly impacted by all these policies. How long have you been farming, and what do you grow there in Nebraska, Jay?
All right. Well, I started farming in 1989, during college, actually, and I grow corn, soybeans, and seed corn.
And how have you been doing just the past couple of years? We've been at this a long time, but just the last couple of years, how have things been going for you? Profits and all, how has it been?
It's been a real struggle in farm country. I mean, just a lot of external factors. I mean, farmers, we can't control our prices at all. That's all determined by Chicago Board of Trade. So, yeah, farm economies, I mean, I think I saw soybeans were at a 10-year low, and corn isn't too far behind that. So, yeah, it's a struggle out here.
I was reading this morning in the Des Moines Register that the USDA said this week that the trade damage from retaliatory tariffs, President Trump's tariffs, has disproportionately affected American farmers. And I'm curious, are you seeing that in real time, Jay?
Oh, most definitely. Especially in soybeans are more directly affected by retaliatory tariffs against with China. They've dropped almost $2 a bushel since early spring, so that's a huge hit. The livestock industry is taking a huge hit, especially pork. I saw a cold storage report the other day. It was 2.4 billion pounds of meat sitting in storage waiting to be exported. I mean, it hasn't hit fully farm country, but it will definitely hit full force this fall.
You have generally supported President Trump. I'm curious what you think of his $12 billion financial aid package for the agriculture sector for farmers like you. Do you support the bailout?
It's a toss-up. I mean, first and foremost, most farmers, we want trade and not an aid package. $12 billion seems like a lot from a taxpayer's perspective, but when you put it all across the whole ag industry, it's a drop in the bucket. USDA doesn't have enough money to make farm economy whole again.
There's a lot of back and forth on this $12 billion aid package for farmers. I wanted to play a couple of clips. Here's Republican Senator Jeff Flake talking about this to Time magazine on Tuesday.
It's the bad deal all the way around. Bad for the taxpayers, horrible for farmers. It's just a bad deal.
$12 billion sounds like a lot of money. Can you put it in context?
It's a lot of money. $12 billion, we're not going to beat. But compared to what farmers lose over time, it's not.
And here's Republican Senator Ben Sasse. He's one of many farm state senators taking a hard line against the president's trade policies. Here he is speaking to CBS News on Tuesday after news broke about the White House farmer bailout proposal.
What the administration is offering them instead is $12 billion of gold-plated crutches. That's not what anybody wants. At no point have I heard a farmer or rancher say, you know what we want? We want more bailouts. We want more welfare. What they want is less trade war.
Is that how you see it, Jay Reiners? I mean, gold-plated crutches. There's Republican Senator Ben Sasse, $12 billion of gold-plated crutches. Jeff Flake says farmers, you know, this is a bad deal. $12 billion compared to what you lose over time doesn't really matter.
Oh, it matters huge. I mean, like I said, put it in perspective. It's just a drop in the bucket. And I mean, my senator from Nebraska is pretty much correct. It's just a golden crutch. Farm country is struggling big time, especially with retaliatory tariffs. And there's other mechanisms that the president could use to go against China. But, you know, tariffs, nobody wins in a trade and tariff war. And for, you know, agriculture in the U.S. is always the target.
You are a fourth-generation farmer. Your family's been on the land there since, 1892, I'm reading here. Are you optimistic about the future in this particular moment, Jay?
Yes, I am. I am actually very bullish agriculture in the U.S. just because of the growing world population. I mean, we are growing more food for the world on less acres than was, you know, even 20, 30 years ago. And, you know, American farmers, we take pride in ourselves being a strong and independent group, but also, you know, raising food and fuel for the rest of the world, too. I mean, that's our job, and we do it very well.
And in the midst of these tariffs and this trade war, President Trump, he's in Dubuque, Iowa today. He's talking to farmers. He's saying farmers like you need to be, quote, a little patient as we go through this period. What do you say back to him, Jay?
Oh, I think we all have a little patience, but, I mean, he followed through on his campaign promises, but he needs to follow through on the other half of his campaign promises, striking new free trade agreements with other countries. I mean, we haven't even started negotiations with any other country yet. And that was part of his promise, so I guess we'll wait and see, and I hope we hurry up and get this wrapped up, because that's going to hurt farmers really bad this winter.
Jay Reiners is a corn and soybean farmer in Nebraska. Jay, thanks for coming in and taking the time to be with me today. I really do appreciate it, and all the best to you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you. Let me go to Washington now. To help unpack all the latest news is Anna Swanson. Anna covers trade and international economics for the New York Times. You can find a link to her latest story, United States and Europe Forestall Trade War with Preliminary Agreement, Further Talks. That's at our website, onpointradio.org. Anna, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me about this meeting yesterday with President Trump and the President of the European Commission.
Yes. So in the midst of these trade tensions between the United States and the European Union, the European Commission dispatched their president, Jean-Claude Juncker, to Washington to talk with President Trump. And we weren't necessarily expecting anything to immediately come out of that meeting, but the White House called a surprise press conference in the Rose Garden yesterday afternoon. And the two stood side by side and announced that they were beginning talks for a new kind of trade agreement. The details are still pretty sparse at this point, and it seems like more of an agreement to begin talking rather than anything else. The president has imposed tariffs on the European Union, and Europe has responded with its own retaliatory measures, which are, you know, part of what Jay was talking mm-hmm. about there. And they haven't agreed to pause those, but they said that they would work towards resolving those tensions. So it seems like just the beginning of kind of a long road. Mm.
Here's some background. These two leaders have had weeks of combative rhetoric, President Trump and the European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker. They spoke at a joint press conference in the Rose Garden, as I mentioned, and after the meeting, here's the president recapping what they discussed.
We want to further strengthen this trade relationship to the benefit of all American and European citizens. This is why we agreed today, first of all, to work together towards zero tariffs, zero non-tariff barriers, and zero subsidies on non-auto industrial goods.
Here's the president again in the Rose Garden reiterating his commitment to negotiate with our European allies. That was a sharp turn from his rhetoric earlier in the day.
While we are working on this, we will not go against the spirit of this agreement unless either party terminates the negotiation. So we're starting the negotiation right now, but we know very much where it's going.
So, Anna Swanson, the European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker called the tariffs initially, quote, stupid. That's how he referred to President Trump's tariffs. What did they agree to yesterday? I mean, I'm reading here the EU agreed to buy more soybeans, eventually liquefied natural gas from the U.S. I mean, talk about sort of the good parts from this meeting.
Yeah, that's right. So the European Commission president had responded, we can also do stupid,
right.
And said that
right.
He would impose his own retaliatory tariffs. Well, the agreement yesterday seems like it is preliminary, as I mentioned. It involves European purchases of soybeans and LNG. Not quite clear what the volumes of those would be or when that would start. Also, discussions about non-auto industrial goods to reduce tariffs. And some discussion about reforming the WTO, certain things that seem aimed at China's unfair trade practices in particular. But I would say overall, you know, while there's been a lot of support for this de-escalation of tension, with business groups and foreign leaders saying they really applaud this less aggressive direction. On the other hand, the president does seem to be kind of taking credit here for solving a crisis of his own making. He, you know, is responsible for ratcheting up tensions with the Europeans in the first place.
We're discussing the president's economic strategy this hour amid the escalating trade war and the meeting yesterday with the EU commissioner. You can join the conversation, listeners. Do you think the president has a grand strategy here or not? What advice would you give to the president if you had his ear? We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Hi, I'm Shankar Vedantam, host of the podcast Hidden Brain. This summer, we're sharing a series about reinventing yourself. We call it You 2.0. Add us to your summer listening for ideas about responding to life's messiness and chaos with wisdom.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about trade tariffs, farmers, and the president's negotiations with the EU yesterday, and you can join the conversation. Is the uncertainty created by the president's tactics worth it? Who stands to gain and who stands to lose in all this? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest today, Anna Swanson, a New York Times reporter covering trade and international economics. I wanted to get this in here. Now, back in March, Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker criticized President Trump's trade strategy and said the Europeans had no choice but to retaliate.
So now we will also impose import tariffs. This is basically a stupid process, the fact that we have to do this, but we have to do it. We'll now impose tariffs on motorcycles, Harley Davidson, on blue jeans, Levi's, on bourbon. We can also do stupid. We also have to be this stupid.
Now contrast that with what was said in the Rose Garden yesterday, shortly after the meeting with President Trump.
When I was invited by the president to the White House, I had one intention. I had the intention to make a deal today. And we made a deal today.
Juncker went on to outline the negotiations and called it a, quote, good, constructive meeting. President Trump tweeted before the EU commissioner meeting, every time I see a weak politician asking to stop trade talks or the use of tariffs to counter unfair tariffs, I wonder what can they be thinking? Are we just going to continue and let our farmers and country get ripped off? Lost $817 billion on trade last year, no weakness. And then this tweet after the meeting with the EU commissioner, great to be back on track with the European Union. This was a big day for free and fair trade. Anna Swanson, that is quite a turnaround, I have to say, from the president, no?
Yes, that's right. And it is a welcome one after the very aggressive rhetoric we've seen, particularly from the Trump administration, but also the Europeans answering right back to that. And so yesterday, you know, was a step back from those tensions and from the brink of a trade war. But, you know, it's less of a deal than the beginning of what could eventually be a deal. And I also think, you know, while it's a step back, it could potentially be a temporary one. We saw the Trump administration earlier this year and last year come close to forging some deals with the Chinese, only to decide that they weren't tough enough. And now we're kind of in a stalemate with that country. So I think a lot of people are hoping that this process will continue and they will be able to come to a constructive solution here.
So a step back, you say, from tension, but I mean, I'm reading all over the place, American companies saying that they've already been negatively impacted by the president's trade wars. Harley-Davidson, General Motors, Whirlpool, among others. You know, the president says these tariffs will make right years of unfair trade policies. And yet you hear these companies say, wait a minute, this trade war is already eating into our profits.
That's right. And as I mentioned, the tariffs will continue while they are negotiating. And they've really been escalating rather quickly. Earlier this year, the president imposed his first tariffs on just a few billion dollars of products. By now, that has escalated to cover tens of billions of dollars of products. And the president has threatened hundreds of billions more in these penalties. And so we're seeing In recent weeks, we've seen a very rapid escalation. Yesterday was a little bit of a step back, but in general, the trend has still been much more towards escalating this trade war.
I've got a board full of callers here. Let's get a couple in. John is first in Ian at Oklahoma. Hi, John.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Welcome. Go ahead, please.
My look at the subsidies our president's recommending on this and our tariffs, they're levering up the American farmers right now for consolidation and corporate takeovers. It's just fact. In the 80s, they did it with the dairy, and today we're going to do it with the grains.
You don't think this is a help for farmers? You don't think this is a bit of a handout and a hand up? No?
No, no. They were doing it. They've had 5-6 years of nice returns. Not great, nice. And, it's just, it really makes you wonder where our president's, you know, tariffs are going.
John, thank you. Thanks very much for the call there from Oklahoma. Let's go to Dubuque, Iowa. Ken is on the line. Ken, President Trump is in your neck of the woods today. He's in Dubuque. How do you see all this?
Hi, Jane. Yes, I see this from a little different aspect, and that is there's a social element involved in rural communities where everybody knows everyone and, quite frankly, judges everyone. And many farmers would prefer not to have these subsidies offered. Not that they won't take them, but they'd prefer them not offered because it places them in somewhat of a conflict with their neighbors. In other words, other people who have other businesses who are also hurting, but the farmer gets bailed out and the other business does not.
Interesting. Ken, thank you very much. Let me get one more in here from Minocqua, Wisconsin. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Yeah, I just had to make a comment that I believe that this situation with the tariffs is about Trump burying farmers, and they're going belly up so that industry and his rich friends can purchase the land at a much lesser cost, and they can either industrialize that land or they can become mega farms. I think behind the scenes, it's all linked to the deregulation that's going on as well.
Interesting, Mike. Thank you. These are three really interesting points. Let me get Ishwar Prasad in here to talk about them from Washington, professor of trade policy at Cornell University and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. You can find a link to his op-ed, Five Myths About Tariffs, at our website, onpointradio.org. Ishwar, welcome back to On Point. How nice to have you again.
Thanks for having me on, Jane.
So there you heard a couple of points, really good ones, about, you know, this $12 billion handout, bailout for farmers. Callers worried about the farmers themselves and the motivation behind this $12 billion bill.
So the sad irony about what Trump is doing is that the people he intends to help, those who have lost jobs in declining industries, farmers and so on, are precisely those being hurt by the approach he is taking to this issue. By putting tariffs on imports, essentially, you create problems for businesses, you create problems for farmers because they face retaliatory tariffs. Now, many businesses are going to face retaliation in the countries they operate in. And right now, you have supply chains that weave around a variety of countries. And remember, Trump is taking on not just China, against whom there are some legitimate grievances in terms of trading partners, but also longstanding trading partners and allies of the U.S., including the European Union, Canada, Mexico. So if you think about a car being produced in the U.S., the supply chains go back and forth between Canada and Mexico. And the uncertainty created by tariffs means that you're going to have producers move their production facilities into other countries to escape retaliatory tariffs. Unfortunately, a farmer cannot move his production, mm-hmm. his or her production abroad. So in effect, you end up hurting exactly those you're trying to help.
So you're an expert in trade economics. Help us understand this, because the president says, you know, we have to do this. We've lost $800 billion on trade just last year. It's not fair. We have to stop this. And quite frankly, a lot of people voted for the president, knowing he'd take action on this very point.
It's certainly a message that resonates at a time of great economic uncertainty and job losses in certain industries. Now, the difficult issue here is that the entire concern about trade is framed in the context of the trade deficit, and that is just not right, conceptually speaking. So let's take an example. Let's say I make $1,000 a month, and I choose to spend, say, a couple of $100 buying a computer, and that's going to be good in terms of my future income. So it's sort of investment. Mm-hmm. And then I have $800 left that I spend on various things. Now, if I want to spend an additional $100, somebody has to sell me that stuff and they have to give me money to buy that stuff. So if I go to an expensive restaurant and blow an additional $100, it's hard for me to blame the restaurant for taking advantage of me. So these macroeconomic policies are what are driving trade deficits. Right now, the U.S. government is borrowing a lot. U.S. households are not saving a lot. And of course, Trump's tax reform plan has driven up the budget deficit even more. So the U.S. is going to be borrowing a lot more from the rest of the world. And of course, the U.S. economy is doing well, which is a good thing, which means that U.S. consumers are buying more things from the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. So what we should be looking at is macro policies. There are certainly some unfair trading practices, especially in the context of China. What would have been far more effective would have been to ally the U.S. with other trading partners who have very similar concerns about China's trading and economic practices,
such
and
as
put pressure
such
on China.
As who would those be?
Let's take an example. So the European Union, Japan, Canada all have concerns that their intellectual property is being appropriated by Chinese manufacturers. All of their firms have a very difficult time getting into the Chinese market, operating there, making investments in China. So the concerns are shared by all of these countries. But unfortunately, rather than going against China first, what Trump chose to do was to use his flimsy pretext of national security considerations, impose steel and aluminum tariffs that mm-hmm. hurt not China, but other countries. So we've made enemies of the American traditional allies. And this has made it much harder to create a common front against China.
Anna Swanson, remind us how we got to this point. Ishwar noted the steel and aluminum tariffs. Talk about why President Trump initially imposed those tariffs.
Yeah, that's right. So it's been a very busy year, but we did see those steel and aluminum tariffs go into effect on some countries in March. Initially, the allies like the European Union, Mexico, and Canada were excluded, while the Trump administration said it was negotiating with those countries to reach a better deal. But after a few months, the Trump administration, you know, said that those negotiations had not progressed far enough and included those allies in that measure as well. And it's given various explanations for why we are putting tariffs on our allies. A lot of talk has been about Chinese Chinese overcapacity in the steel industry. But the argument is also that, you know, some of this Chinese steel may flow into the United States through other countries, or that taking these measures against allies, you know, might encourage them to act more toughly on China itself. But that's a pretty roundabout measure, and it's one that has caused a lot of pain, whereas, you know, many critics say it would be more direct and more effective to simply work with allies directly to address some of these common trade problems that Ishwar is talking
about. So, Ishwar, after those initial trade tariffs were imposed, the fallout was this tit-for-tat trade war. I'm curious, to your mind, have the retaliatory tariffs stopped for the moment?
There is a temporary ceasefire with the European Union, as pointed out by Anna, but it's not clear it's going to last. With China, there seems to be an escalating round of tariffs, and it's broadened not just into a trade war, but a much broader economic war, with China making life difficult for American businesses that operate in the Chinese market, either selling there or using it as part of their supply chains. China just recently used its clout to block a deal that Qualcomm was trying to initiate with another technology firm, NXP. So I don't think we've seen the end of this yet.
So that's interesting. Is that a sort of a cascade of unintended consequences there that you're referring to?
That's exactly right. And the interesting thing is that there is some political pushback that is coming that is forcing Trump to pull back a little bit. But by and large, Trump's political base seems to be very much standing by him and is quite favorable about his tough approach on trade. And the tough approach, both in terms of talk and actions, does seem to have resonated to some extent in the heartland. And as Anna has reported in some of her work, even people who are hurt by the tariffs still seem to be supporting Trump, and Congress talks a lot but hasn't taken any significant action yet. Mm-hmm. So the fact that the economic and political costs are not being felt by the president certainly makes it easier for him to continue this trade war and not de-escalate too much.
Let's get another call in here from David in Des Moines, Iowa. Hi, David.
Hi. Yeah, actually kind of echoing that last point from the analyst. I live in the Midwest. And I know the farmers are predicting a 40% loss from last year because of the tariffs. And I know Trump had the bailout. I know he said Europe's going to buy more, but it's clearly not going to fill that entire gap. And I also, about that bailout, I asked some of my conservative friends, said, that's kind of a handout. I thought you're the party that hates handouts. And they said, well, yeah, we don't really like it. But they kind of bristled a little, and that's it. And like I was just saying, there seems to be no political cost. They just don't seem to care, and I don't understand it.
David, I hear you. President Trump is you know, sort of saying, got to be patient. You got to be patient. You got to let this play out. Here he is on Tuesday at the Veterans of Foreign Wars headquarters in Kansas City, telling the American people, again, be patient. He said his tactics will force other countries to capitulate, and that any economic pain now will be worth it in the long run.
Making tremendous progress. They're all coming. They don't want to have those tariffs put on them. They're all coming to see us. And the farmers will be the biggest beneficiary. Watch. We're opening up markets. You watch what's going to happen. Just be a little patient.
Ishwar, what about that patience here? You know, appears we had a successful meeting yesterday with the EU commissioner. President Trump there saying they're all coming to see us now. Just wait. Farmers will be the biggest beneficiaries here. We're opening up markets. Just wait. See what's going to happen. How do you see it?
It's worth thinking a little bit about what the economic objectives at hand here are. Certainly opening up markets to American goods will help American farmers and manufacturers more broadly. One can also think about other economic practices and trading partners of major trading partners like China that certainly need to be resolved. But the tactics that have been adopted here, I think, are not going to be very effective. If you start going after countries with tariffs, it gets their backup, and it's not clear this is going to lead to a durable opening up of those markets. And more importantly, it makes other countries very suspicious about America's you know, willingness to push forward free trade. And the U.S. is, quite frankly, losing its influence because it is seen as a disruptor of the global trading rules. Trump is already already threatened to pull back from the World Trade Organization, which is far from perfect. But unless one uses these multilateral approaches and goes after countries one by one, that's not going to be very productive in terms of getting what the U.S. really wants.
Anna Swanson, in 20 seconds here, the president says the countries are coming to us. They don't want those tariffs put on them. Is that what you're seeing?
Well, we are in negotiations with several countries, for example, over NAFTA. But I think the question now is, you know, what's different? We were in negotiations with Europe and the Trans-Pacific Partnership countries before Trump came into power. So what is this new approach all about?
We are discussing the latest in trade and tariffs, how it's playing out on the global stage and how it's affecting people right here in the United States. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
There's a new way to hear Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and all your favorite programs. Just ask your smart device to play NPR. Listen to your local station anytime, like this. Hey, smart device, play NPR.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking trade and the president's evolving position on tariffs this hour. And you can join the conversation. Are you with the president on this one? Is this a campaign promise you hoped he'd keep or not? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Great panel this hour. I've been speaking with Anna Swanson, who covers trade and international economics for The New York Times, and Ishwar Prasad, a professor of trade policy at Cornell University and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Here is North Dakota Senate Democrat Heidi Heitkamp in a Senate Banking Committee hearing earlier this month explaining that the president's trade policies will reverberate and create chaos through many sectors of the economy.
If the president's trade policies continue to result in escalating tariffs by our trading partners, I think this is going to have serious damage to the economy, and in particular, producers and consumers in my state. Now, just to give you a number, North Dakota is the ninth most dependent on imported steel. That surprises people, but you think about our base industry. What's one of the primary inputs in drilling and in moving oil? It's steel. What's one of the primary inputs in large equipment manufacturing? It's steel.
And here's Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley speaking to CNN earlier this month, lamenting the uncertainty the president's tariffs and trade wars have created.
He's negotiating, I think, as a business person. And if he takes us the competitor to the brink and he doesn't go over the brink, we're going to get a better deal. But if he goes over the brink, it's catastrophic. And right now on soybeans and corn in my state, it is catastrophic with the dramatic drops in prices we've had. It's the uncertainty of it that bothers people, not the fact of what the president's trying to accomplish.
Ishwar Prasad, talk about the larger, you know, sort of the bigger picture here and the ramifications beyond sort of what we've been talking about. I mean, there's Heidi Heitkamp saying there's going to be serious damage to the economy if this continues. How do you see it?
The collateral damage to industries that face higher import costs for their intermediate goods and imported inputs, the cost for consumers who pay more, the cost for businesses that are going to lose access and face disruption in their supply chains, and a lot of uncertainty is going to do very little good for the U.S. Economy. Now, the question is, what is the right approach to sort this out? Because certainly there are some industries that have faced a very difficult time. They're losing markets abroad and in the U.S. Some of it is due to automation, some of it due to trade. But the fundamental solution is what sort of policies would help in improving trade competitiveness. And that's not tariffs. It's really about improving the productivity of the U.S. economy, reducing government budget deficits, and spending more at the same time on things like education, infrastructure, and so on that can make American manufacturing much more competitive. Unfortunately, those are not the policies that are being used. Tariffs, I think, are going to be on net not helpful and potentially even destructive.
So Ishwar talks about the trickle-down effects here, Anna Swanson. You know, there are a lot of moving parts to this story. This is all happening against the backdrop of the NAFTA talks, the steel and aluminum trade tariffs with China. I mean, all the things that we've been talking about, but this is just... It's not alone in the wilderness here. We're seeing all of these trade measures piling up on top of a lot of other issues, you know, with regard to the economy.
Yeah, that's right. So there are trade measures on so many fronts right now. And I think that's really what sets the Trump administration's trade approach apart in some ways. I mean, we saw past presidents do, you know, a few of these measures to protect domestic industries, but the Trump administration has really launched them globally against allies and adversaries alike and across an array of industries. And you are seeing the effects start to add up in the economy. I mean, for a long time, you know, economists have been saying that the effects of these trade actions would be pretty minimal because it does affect a small proportion of goods compared with the overall U.S. economy. But you do have pockets that are very affected, including farmers and small manufacturers. And, you know, with the escalation that's going on, some economists are starting to say that some of these effects could erase, you know, some or even maybe perhaps most of the benefits of the tax cut, because tariffs, after all, are a kind of tax and a kind of regulation. So they really are running against the overall effect of the president's tax cuts.
A lot more callers here. Let me get a couple in. Daniel in Wisconsin, Harsha, Wisconsin. Hi, Daniel. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I just want to say, I didn't start out being a supporter of Trump, but I have become a supporter of Trump. I go with whoever is for the people. I do believe he's doing a good job. I do believe this tariff thing is working. Mm-hmm. The EU is already jumping. The EU jumps, everybody's going to come aboard. He's going to make this happen. I'm sure of it.
You don't worry about the trickle-down effect of all this, Daniel. You think this is eventually, President Trump says, be patient. You're being patient. You think you're going to see the benefits of this.
I do believe we're going to see the benefit of it, and we've been patient for 20 years. It's time for somebody to jump and make a move. He's got the guts to do it. Let him do his job.
Daniel, thank you. Thank you very much. Ishwar Prasad, there's a caller, Daniel, in Wisconsin, who says it's time for a different approach. What we've been doing hasn't worked, and we've got to do something that will make a splash, and this is the president to do it.
Certainly, the toughness might be irrelevant in the context of some countries like China. Again, China, the U.S. has used a policy of strategic patience to get it to do the right thing in terms of opening up its markets, meeting commitments it had made under the World Trade Organization agreement, and so on, and it didn't do that. So getting tough with China would certainly have made sense. With other closer trading partners like the European Union, Canada, Mexico, and so on, there are issues certainly to be resolved, but unfortunately, I don't think what we are seeing right now is going to help the U.S. in the long run. What is actually happening in the background is that many countries are going around the U.S. So the European Union and Japan are considering signing trade agreements with China, so they will get better deals than the U.S. will in the long run. And the European Union might end up opening its markets as much to China as to the U.S. So whether the U.S. gains in the long run is far from obvious from this strategy.
So to Daniel's point, the caller Daniel, here's another listener from our website who says China is the one hurting right now and their economy is not as strong as ours. We have the upper hand in the effort to level the playing field, even if we have to bail out our farmers. Anna Swanson, China, the weaker economy at this point, and, you know, might this all actually come to fruition?
Well, I do think the Chinese are more dependent on exports as an economy than the United States. Trade actually makes up a more limited part of the American economy. But there are other advantages that the Chinese have going into a trade war. One important one, I think, is that they're not a democracy. And so you've heard a lot of complaints and a lot of pushback about this tariff war in the United States. In China, there have been directives to silence the media, to stop them from talking about some of these trade tensions. And so, you know, the president has these constituencies that are starting to get very worried, like farmers, like small manufacturers, and midterm elections are coming up. So, you know, I think his approach has been popular to a good extent in the heartland. But as this pain of the tariffs starts to be felt, you know, the question is how patient are farmers and manufacturers about that?
More callers. Susan in Plattsburgh, New York. Hi, Susan. Glad you waited. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Very interesting conversation. I do have some things that I would like to state that have already been said to some degree, but here I am. I'm an average individual out there working every day, and I'm really concerned about where we're going. To Ms. Monson's statement about China and the different type of economy they have and government,
mm-hmm.
we treat this as though everybody is just like us and they see the world the way we do. No, they don't. They don't. And their decisions aren't based the same way that Americans make decisions. And the very first thing I would do out there, if I found that the United States was maybe unreliable at creating trade agreements and that, is I'd shop elsewhere. That's what I would do. I'd say, fine, we're going to break these trade agreements. We're going to go elsewhere. I also would like to say that tariffs affect the cost of products that the average individual has to pay. People like Trump and a lot of people now currently serving in Congress, they're insulated by their money and their position that an average individual isn't insulated by.
Excellent point, Susan. I thank you. I hear what you're saying, and I have another caller here, Fawn, who I think is going to say some of the same things in Abington, Maryland. Hi, Fawn. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Yes, I just heard the caller, and I totally agree with her. I'm a solo household, and my grocery bill, I track everything, 50 to 75 just in the last 3 months.
And you attribute that to what's going on with the trade war and the tariffs?
Yes, I absolutely do. Trump is an infantile president. He has no idea. He's a second-grade bully. He wants to smash it all and take the marbles home and then say, well, I'll trade you back. And he's just doing stupid things. My grandparents on my parents' side, my mother's side, are and were, we still have people in this, farmers of commodity soybeans, corn, beef cattle, hogs in central Illinois. They're being hurt. We're like lifetime Republicans. I'm much more progressive because I'm an environmentalist and have been since that's what I majored in. I love it. But the point is, they're hurting us. And the bailout of farmers for commodities, $12 billion. Okay, but what about my local producers who produce things and then the ShopRite takes them in and sells local produce? I support that. My bill's 50% more.
I hear it. I hear it. Your costs are going up, Fawn. And you know what? There are a lot of people who say, you know what? This is about time. This is a president who was following through on his campaign promises. And we got to do what we got to do. Anna Swanson, what about that the farmer bailout, the $12 billion bailout? How do you see that? I mean, Fawn brings that up. Do you see it more as a political move by the president rather than an actual economic game changer at this point?
Yeah, in part I do. You know, I mean, the president's motivations, I think, obviously, farmers and voters in the Midwest were an important base of support for him. So in some sense, you know, the administration, I think, very sincerely does not want to betray them, you know, wants to try to support them as much as possible, even though it is pursuing these goals that are very contrary to their interest. But, you know, we tend to be cynical here in Washington as well, and midterms are coming up. And you have seen Democratic candidates really rally around the kind of pain that these trade measures are causing in the heartland. And so I think the president is very eager to head that off, made some big steps toward that this week, first with the bailout, $12 billion to farmers, the announcement yesterday that the European Union would be buying more soybeans. And then today he's speaking in Iowa. So I expect to hear a little bit more about those victories from the president today.
Ishwar, the USDA said this week that there is no plan for what this $12 billion bailout will actually look like. How do you see this bailout? Do you see it working? Do you see it as just a Band-Aid for a bigger problem?
It is going to be a Band-Aid with some political impact, but frankly, a very modest economic impact because for soybean farmers like the one you had on earlier as a guest, the bigger cost is the loss of markets in the long run because now major importers like China are going to look for other suppliers because they see the U.S. is no longer being a reliable and trustworthy supplier. So even if the short-run pain can be alleviated to some extent, the real issue is how the world perceives the U.S. as a somewhat unreliable and untrustworthy trading partner and starts looking for alternatives.
So looking ahead, Ishwar, give us some possible scenarios here, how this might play out. I just have a couple of minutes here, but how could this impact the American and global economies in the short and long term?
I at least have the hope that ultimately reason will prevail, but that assumption has certainly been violated quite significantly during this time. We've not come to this sort of situation in the past where even longstanding trading agreements that the U.S. has been part of, including NAFTA agreements with many other countries such as Korea and so on, are now being questioned. The bigger context here is really, I think, the sense that the U.S. cannot be relied on anymore to maintain, both the spirit and principle of agreements that it has negotiated in the past. And that affects the U.S. both in terms of economic and geopolitical influence, let alone taking a leadership role in maintaining the global trading and financial systems.
Anna Swanson, on this point of trade and tariffs, the president hasn't seemed to have been in a negotiating posture. Rather, he's been sort of expecting others to sort of accept his demands, do it this way, my way or the highway. And some would say that's a good thing. Finally, we have someone who steps up. The president seemed to step back a little bit with his meeting with the EU commissioner with regard to tariffs on automobiles, right? How do you see this moving forward politically in Washington this week?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of negotiations on many fronts with the European Union, with Canada and Mexico over NAFTA. A lot of balls in the air with the Trump administration and waiting to see where they fall. But I think, you know, one of the major issues with the Trump administration's negotiating strategy is really kind of uncertainty about what the U.S. wants and whether it is negotiating in good faith. We heard some concerns from the Europeans about whether, an agreement with this president would stick or whether he would return to threatening tariffs again tomorrow. So he has talked about various goals at various points in time, unfair trade practices, lowering tariffs, the trade deficit. The Europeans and others are saying, you know, on some of those issues, we can do something. We have talked in the past. We're willing to move forward. On others, like the trade deficit, we really, are not at power to reduce that. So there's a lot of uncertainty about what the president's specific demands are on these fronts and whether countries can then satisfy them with negotiations.
Well, so much to watch here, and we do appreciate both of you coming in and helping us understand it all. Ishwar Prasad, professor of trade policy at Cornell University, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. You can find a link to his op-ed, Five Myths About Tariffs, at our website, onpointradio.org. Ishwar, so great to have you. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Jane.
And Anna Swanson, New York Times reporter covering trade and international economics. You can find a link to her latest story at our website, onpointradio.org. Anna, great reporting, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Listeners, thanks as always for your excellent insights and for taking the time to listen. Before we go, we have some exciting news of our own to share today. Two new hosts have been named to this program. They are Meghna Chakrabarty and David Folkenflik. They begin to host the week of August 20th. We welcome them to the On Point family and say congratulations to Meghna and David. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.